I want to begin with a number of really. There's one key source that I want to learn with you, but to appreciate it, we need to learn a couple more first. But there is a source that I think perfectly encapsulates the transition from what we spoke about last week to what we are going to talk about this week. Again, this series is all about, well, what is a good Jew? And we're using the thought of Rav Aharon Lichtenstein as found in what I think is one of the most important books to read at any point in the year, but particularly during this time, Rav Lichtenstein's By His Light, which is a fantastic book. And what makes this book in part so compelling is that Rav Lichtenstein starts by, ostensibly it's a book about what should a frum Jew, how should a frum Jew live their lives? But he actually begins, and we talked about this last week, with, well, first, what are the expectations on us as human beings? And we spoke a lot last week. We devoted a lot of energy to exploring sources that focus primarily on being a human being is important. We can't forget that. We have to contribute positively to the world around us. We have to do what is expected of all human beings, that we are Jews, that we have additional obligations and expectations. It may impose more upon us, and imposes a lot more upon us for sure, but it doesn't replace those obligations. And I realized this past week that was the perfect source to kind of capture once again what I was trying to say last week, and also now turn us towards what I want to talk about this week. So it begins with the very beginning of Parashat Kedoshim, source number one. One of the most interesting commandments the Torah gives us, Vayidaber Adonai el Moshe le'mor, daber el kol adat b'nei Yisrael v'amarta alehem. Speak to the whole, you know, Jewish community. Say to them, Kedoshim tihiyu, be holy, ki kadosh ani Adonai Elohechem, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. God commands us, we need to be holy. What on earth does that mean? You know, this is literally the ultimate fodder. You know, the truth is, I at this point try to avoid talking about the opening verses of Parashat Kedoshim at a sermon, but it is, if there are any verses that scream out, this needs to be the content of a sermon every single year, it's the beginning of Parashat Kedoshim. What does it mean to be holy? So Rashi, in his commentary, gives one explanation. Kedoshim Tihiyu, source number two, Hevu Furushim min ha'arayot u'min ha'avera. So what it means to be holy, Parashat Acharei Mot, the Parashat of Acharei Mot and Kedoshim, all this area of Sefer Vayikra is dominated by sexual prohibitions. Says Rashi, it's obvious. Read kind of the obligation to be holy as part of the broader commandment context, and it's very clear. Avoid violating the various sexual prohibitions described at this point in the Torah, and in general, distance yourself from sin. That's what it means to be holy. Very important idea. The idea of just accepting the general obligation of commandments, fine. Ramban, however, Nachmanides, shares an idea that is absolutely fascinating. It's a very lengthy comment as a whole. I kind of took the key point about it. The key point of it, I took it out for source number three, just to explain what I didn't put in the source. Ramban talks about the fact that technically speaking, there are a lot of things the Torah permits. You know, the Torah says you can't have a cheeseburger, but the Torah says chicken is, you know, it has to be shechted fine, yada, 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 but chicken is kosher. So in theory, you could eat, you know, chicken to your heart's content. We are blessed with a kosher Krispy Kreme. You could go into Krispy Kreme every morning and buy a box of donuts just for yourself. Though you are not violating any Torah prohibition by doing that. However, Ramban, after he doesn't use the Krispy Kreme example in a shocking turn of events for a medieval Spanish rabbi, but Ramban says he describes similar situations and he points out the problem with this. Source number three. Vihine yihya naval birashut hatorah. Such a person is, and the phrase naval birashut hatorah, and naval is, the English is sordid, it doesn't quite capture it. Naval is a disgusting, the kind of thing that you just like, nevela is, picture roadkill as a good translation of like nevela, the same word. It's something disgusting, it's something horrifying. A naval birashut hatorah is someone who is doing nothing prohibited, and yet is nonetheless an objectionable human being. Lefichach, Ramban continues, Ba hakatuv acharei sheperat ha'isurim she'asar otam legamrei, after giving us a whole list of prohibitions, v'tziva v'davar klalei she'nihye prushim min ha'muturat. There is a general command that you have to have moderation even in matters that are permitted. Ramban says there is this extra category going beyond the letter of the law. He talks about that in this comment also. But there is this idea that you cannot be a naval birushat ha-Torah. You cannot be, and I would like to extend this idea into what we were talking about last week, and as we are about to discuss this week, which is that we cannot allow the obligations demanded of us as Jews to completely and entirely obliterate our duties as human beings. To turn around and to not feel like you have an obligation to wider society, to turn around and feel like you have no role whatsoever to play in the wider world, because you want to focus on your spiritual growth. I would perhaps, you know, I don't necessarily want to apply Ramban's really strong term, Naval Birushot HaTorah, but that general idea that you are using the Torah, you're misunderstanding its point. And I think as we are about to spend, you know, this week and next week talking about what does it mean to be a Jew, it obviously gives us far more to be focused on than what we spoke about last week, but it doesn't completely replace it. Those things we learned about, those important ideals, we cannot use our spiritual aspiration and ambition as a justification for completely putting aside everything else. And I just wanted to kind of once again mention this, you know, clearly state this before going any further. But with that being said, I want to spend tonight discussing what is a good Jew. And for this, I mean, base level, no one particularly exceptional. Next week, I want to talk about what, for want of a better expression, I would call what is a from Jew, as in someone who we would hold up as an example of kind of, you know, a spiritual light. This week, I just want to talk about what are the base level expectations upon us as Jews. And before I go any further, I want to make something very clear. What I am not doing, the purpose of this year is not to give fuel for you to bash other Jews who you don't think are fulfilling their base level obligation as Jews. The point is, for all of us, you know, the whole point of Teshuvah is to look in the mirror at our own failings, not to look at other people's failings. That is, sometimes it's very easy naturally, we'd rather focus on how everyone else should improve rather than ourselves. But I want to talk about base level. We are all Jews. What are the roles expected of us? What does God demand of us? What does it actually mean to be a Jew? And for this, I want to begin. And again, I'm rooting myself. There's just going to be one direct Rav Lichtenstein quote. But again, basically all of these sources come from Rav Lichtenstein. And so he once again draws attention to, I forgot source 4 was source 4. I was gearing myself up to present source, what is actually source 5. Source 4, Rav Lichtenstein points out, we read it last week. Vaitzav Adonai Elohim al ha'adam le'mor, God commanded man, saying, Mikol eitz hagan ochal tochel. Of every tree of the garden you are free to eat. We spoke about this last week, but what's really important to recognize above all else is, as Jews, there is no more important word that sets the tone for everything we do than vayitzav, commanded. In a nutshell, everything I'm going to be talking about can be summed up with that word. God is our mitzvah. He is the one who commands us, and we are commanded. And understanding what this means and the obligations and the mentality it imposes upon us is really important. And for that, I want to turn to source number 5. It's an absolutely fascinating source for so many reasons. But it says the following. So we learn Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, and I put in the English to remind myself to already say this at this point, Rav Yosef is blind. And Rav Yosef says the following. Miresh, I used to think the following. Hava Amina, man da amar halacha karebi Yehuda. I used to say, anyone who will agree that the halacha follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, da amar suma patur min hamitzvot, that a blind person is not obligated in mitzvot, ka'avdina yumatova l'rabanan, I would hold a party for all of the rabbis. My timer, why? Kadina v'ka avdina mitzvot, because I'm not commanded to do them, and yet I do them nonetheless. Rav Yosef says he used to think this way. And it's the way we all naturally think. Volunteers, and this is not to knock volunteers, volunteers are very important, but we live in a world which celebrates volunteerism. And what Rav Yosef is basically saying is he does not have to perform mitzvot if we followed the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, because he's blind. And therefore, he would get so much credit for all the mitzvot he does because he's doing them purely voluntarily. That's his original assumption. You should celebrate the volunteers, the people who opt in. The hashta. But now, says Rav Yosef, second paragraph of source 5, the Shmait Lahad the Rebbe Chanina. Now that I've heard the statement of Rebbe Chanina, the Amar Rebbe Chanina, who says, and we're coming up to one of the most important and significant statements Chazal ever stated, Gadol hametzuve va'oseh, mimisha eino metzuve va'oseh. Greater is the one who is commanded and does than the one who is not commanded and does. Man da amar li ha'ein halacha k'Rebbe Yehuda. If you were to now tell me we don't follow Rebbe Yehuda and I am actually obligated, avdina yuma tavala rabbanan, now I'd hold a party, my timer, d'chi mafkida itle agratafe, because now I'm commanded, I get all this reward. This principle, gadol hametzuva v'osa mimisha eino metzuva v'osa, is one of the most important principles at the heart of Jewish life. It is not, and especially in the 21st century, people sometimes think it is an attack on volunteerism. It is an attack on those who opt in, and it is not. But what it is a celebration and a recognition of the fact that when you are obligated to do something, when you commit to doing something day in, day out, you need greater recognition, because by definition, if you volunteer to do something and you wake up not really in the mood, if you volunteer to go somewhere and the weather's not quite with you, if you're busy, if you're tired, if you're this or you're that, and you're a volunteer, you're not doing it. But if you're obligated, you never get a vacation. You don't get to stop. You don't get to opt out at any point. A volunteer can always pick and choose. But someone who is mitzuva, someone who is obligated, will always gain greater recognition by definition, because they must always do what they are commanded. And this is such a central idea at the heart of our lives as Jews, because we are commanded. And it is this notion of being commanded and the consistency of needing to do things day in, day out without fail, regardless of our mood, that is at the heart of everything we need to do. And the sharp contrast to that notion is the idea of picking and chooses, picking and choosing. And this is where, and I criticize myself as much as anyone else, but this is where perhaps I crank up the Musa dial to slightly higher than I usually go, which is that, and I think this is true of all Jews, by the way, it is not just true of the modern Orthodox community, it's not just true of our community. It tends to be that Jews tend to observe the minimum number of mitzvot they need to in order to be a part, accepted part of their community. In the modern Orthodox world, it's a relatively slim set of mitzvot. But the truth is, in other parts of the Jewish world also, the set of mitzvot might be larger, but the problem is still the same. That too often, as a whole, we have this pick and choose mentality. We don't recognize this notion that we are obligated. Instead, we flit with those things. You know, we flip between things. The things we do, and the things we don't care about. And there are so many ways in which this mentality, this idea, is protested within the halachic system. One incredibly powerful and striking quote is the Gemara in Eruvin. There is a similar statement that also appears in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says the following. It's source number 6 on the sheet. Ha'amar Rabbi Acha bar Chanina. We have the statement of Rabbi Acha bar Chanina. My dichtiv, what is the meaning of the verse? V'ro'ez zonot ya'abed chan. He who consorts with prostitutes wastes his fortune. Kal ha'omer, shmua zona'a, it's a play on words. One who says, this teaching is pleasant, and so I'll do it. V'zo einona'a, and says, this teaching is not pleasant, and therefore they won't. Ma'abed hona shal Torah, they lose the fortune of Torah. But more extreme coming through this, which again Rav Lichtenstein attaches so much significance to, is the imagery of one who picks and chooses mitzvot is as though they are, you know, frequenting prostitutes, which seems very striking imagery. But then the idea behind it, the message behind it, is that one who does the things they want to do and ignores everything else is just doing those things that bring them pleasure, that bring them joy, which is exactly the same, you know, issue at the heart of consorting with prostitutes. It's just being a pleasure-seeking being. And so one who only observes the mitzvot that they want to, that appeal to them, that's not accepting their role of being commanded by God. That's not accepting the yoke of commandments. That's just doing the things they enjoy. We're going to see more sources that relate to this, but you know, if you should enjoy keeping Shabbat. But if you only keep Shabbat because you grew up keeping Shabbat, or you've been keeping Shabbat for so long at this point that it's just second nature and you kind of like it, and you never push yourself any further, therein lies the problem. Because what you're really doing is you're only observing those things you like to do. You're only observing those things you want to do, and you're never pushing yourself further. And there's another source that points to this so well. Before we read it, I do want to give it a trigger warning. Which is that in Rambam's strong language that the situation is about to describe, he is not talking about non-Jewish people who are in the process of converting and are thus adapting their lives to the Jewish world, as we are about to see that what he's going to describe. He's talking about a non-Jewish person who, for absolutely no reason whatsoever, decides they want to keep a given mitzvah. And Rambam writes the following. Source number 7. Akum, a non-Jewish person, sha'asak b'Torah, who learns Torah, chayav mita, is liable for the death penalty. Again, it's not talking whether or not we practically follow this, but it's not talking about people who are learning in order to be in a better position to convert, to decide whether to convert. An interesting point, by the way, that's always worth noting. Most of the time you find in a Jewish source the word akum, which is an acrostic for avodat kochavim, idolaters. It is usually a censorship point. And it used to say in the Jewish source the term goy, which is, even though sometimes can be seen to have pejorative connotations, it doesn't. It's just the generic term for non-Jewish person. From Beitin, Andy, I saw you post the question to everyone. The liable for death penalty. So this is the laws of king is talking about kind of capital punishment, you know, those sorts of things. So is it Rambam is basically saying what's illegal in a Jewish nation. So if we lived in a completely, you know, Torah consumed world, there would ostensibly be a whole variety of religious laws, and there would be punishments for them. And even though practically speaking, Judaism is very averse to the death penalty, it basically makes it nigh on impossible to actually execute someone, the punishments are still technically on the book. So that's what Rambam's describing here. But Akum, Avodat Kochavim, sources used to say goy, meaning a generic non-Jewish person. But because of censorship, because of, you know, various persecutions throughout the generations, these sources were generally amended to say instead avodat kochavim, which means an idolater, which is a less, you know, it's like, oh, Christian censors, we're not talking about you, we're talking about, you know, people who worship stars. That's not you guys. So that's just an interesting point to note. And as Rambam continues, lo ya'asok ela b'sheva mitzvot shelohen bilvad. They can only engage in the seven Noahide laws, which we talked about last week. V'chein akum sheshavat. Take a non-Jewish person who decides to rest. They decide to observe Shabbat. Afilu b'yom mimot hachol. Even on another day of the week, let's say they decide to pick a Tuesday that they're going to observe Shabbat. Im asa ahu la'atzmo kamo Shabbat. If they observe it, they treat it like Shabbat. Chayav mita, again, they get the death penalty. Klalo shel dava. The general principle here. Ein menichin otan lechadesh dat, v'la'asot mitzvot la'atzman midatan. We don't allow people to innovate a new religion and create new commandments for themselves based on their own reasonings. Ela, o yihye ger tzedek v'kabel kol mitzvot, either convert, become an actual, you know, fully fledged Jew, or ya'amod b'torato v'lo yasiv v'lo yigra, or just observe the seven Noahid laws and neither add nor detract. The principle behind what Rambam's saying here is that you can't pick and choose. You can't do those things that appeal to you, and that's that. That's not Judaism. We don't like that. We don't allow that. We don't want that. If you're going to want to follow the Ribono Shel Olam, if you want to follow his religion, either become a Jew and follow everything, or remain a non-Jew and just accept the seven laws that are obligated on you. There is no picking and choosing. There is no deciding what you want to keep based on what appeals to you and what doesn't appeal to you. There is none of that. You're either all in or you're not. And as much as that applies in, you know, Hilchot Melachim regarding non-Jewish people, so too does it apply to us. When it comes to being Jews, and again, I'm not talking about religious, you know, ideal, you know, I'm tempted to use the Yiddish word heiliger, which is not usually a word you would find coming out of my mouth. But, you know, you want to be like, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, spiritually elite Jews. I am talking about base level, you know, Jewish obligation 101. You don't get to pick and choose. You have to do, you're all in. You're either all in or, I don't want to say what's the point, I'll come back to that later. But it's the idea that we have to accept all the obligations. We don't get to ignore those ones we don't like. Quickly, I was asked a question. Would Rambam have made such a distinction between non-Jews as a whole and people wanting to study? While I don't know off the top of my head exactly Rambam's entire details of conversion, I think the general principle always is, if you want to convert, you have to learn stuff beforehand. And that is a general truism of every single, you know, conversion process known to man, is that there's always an exception for people undergoing conversion, because by definition, a convert has to accept mitzvot. And while a convert cannot necessarily know every single mitzvah, you know, under the sun, they have to go in knowing what is expected of them. So Rambam would make that distinction, but that's not what Rambam's describing here. Rambam is describing someone who, you know what, I really am interested in Rashi's commentary on the Torah. And not from an academic perspective, but like for one reason or another, it appeals to you. So Rambam says, no, like you don't get to kind of just like engage in one aspect. Or, you know, nowadays the digital Shabbat is a really popular idea to, you know, take one day a week where you don't, you know, use a device. It's basically been borrowed from the observation that Orthodox Jews spend a day a week disconnected from all devices. Someone who I'm a huge fan of called Cal Newport is very against the idea of a digital Shabbat, because he thinks It doesn't actually solve the problem, which is we're addicted to our devices. It's just, you know, taking one day a week to not be addicted. Separate point. But let's say someone decided to take that slightly further. They loved the digital Shabbat so much that they start to get interested in Shabbat as a whole. And now all of a sudden, and there are people who definitely do this. I recently heard of someone in the Kansas City area who does this. They keep Shabbat because they like the idea, but nothing else. Says Rambam, that's bad because they're picking and choosing. And you don't get to do that. All the mitzvot are equal in terms of our obligation to observe. And the truth is, Rambam is consistent in this. Because one of the most fascinating of all of Rambam's opinions is that he takes issue with a well-known practice, custom, that basically, to my knowledge, is ubiquitous in shuls. We stand for the Ten Commandments. Says Rambam, he received a question about this, and he has a whole lengthy response, but I kind of took, again, just a choice quote that kind of captures the idea. Source number 8. V'chein haya ra'oi la'asot b'chol makom shemin hagam la'amot. Any place where there is a custom to stand for the Ten Commandments, sarich laman am, you have to protest this. Stop it. End it. You can't do this. Biglal mashem agia bazem in hafzed be'emune, it reflects a flaw in faith. Sheyesh b'torah madregot u'miksata me'ulam imiksata v'zera ad ma'ot. Because what it implies is that there are some parts of the Torah that are more important than others. Rambam did not like, he protested, he was against, he thought it was prohibited to stand for the Ten Commandments. Because what are the optics of that? Parashat Yitro or Va'etchanan, we're reading a whole bunch of Torah, and all of a sudden there's a point where everyone rises. And that implies that we are reading a specifically important thing. Something more important than everything else. And Rambam thought that was a problem because the Ten Commandments are no more important than the other 603. And he thought, by standing, you were indicating, you're implying, you're teaching everyone in the shul, these are special. These are important. In other words, you know, honor your parents, very, very important mitzvah. And yes, we do have some categories where we try to understand some mitzvah are more important than others, but ostensibly it is no more or less important than other mitzvot in the Torah, which we don't stand for. As a complete aside, but Rav Soloveitchik, and he's not the only one who justifies this, is why we read the Ten Commandments in a different tune. And our standing is actually a recreation of standing at the foot of Har Sinai reading the Torah, to kind of create this distinction between, it's not that we are standing for a part of the Torah to elevate it above others, but we're entering kind of this different phase of Torah reading, indicated by the different tune, by a whole host of other things. And that's kind of the justification for this practice. But Rambam was completely and utterly opposed to this idea. We cannot claim that some mitzvot are more important than any others. We cannot stand in shul and we hear, you know, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadoshah, you know, remember Shabbat to keep it. And we're like, oh, good, we do that. You know, Ten Commandments, broadly speaking, apart from Shabbat, are relatively easy to observe. Again, I mentioned last week, hopefully no one murders and steals and, you know, all those other things. So there you go. You're in the clear. The problem is, it's very easy to congratulate ourselves. We didn't do any idolatry. We didn't take God's name in vain at all in the past. You know, if only we had to worry about the Ten Commandments for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we'd be in pretty good stead. Okay, we probably all broke Shabbat at some point or another. Let's be honest, in the past 2 months, we don't even have to probably go back the whole year. That was probably something we did, everyone. Let's just be honest. But apart from that, relatively speaking, my parents will be listening to this, you know, another time. Hopefully they will feel I have not failed in my duty of kibbud av v'aim. Otherwise, that would be awkward. But there you go. Generally speaking, the Ten Commandments, oh, we could be like, oh, these are the most important ones. Who cares about the rest? But that's not how Judaism works. And we need to understand and we need to accept our obligation, the obligations that we have upon us. And that it is observing all of those obligations and recognizing all of them that is greater than simply opting into things. And there's a really, really important idea that builds off this, which neatly is also found at the end of Parashat Kedoshim. We began with Parashat Kedoshim, and you know, this is not going to be an hour-long share, just looking at the clock. You know, we've got a few more sources to read. But the end of Parashat Kedoshim teaches the following. We get almost a repeat of the opening of Parashat Kedoshim. Source number 9. V'yitem li kedoshim, you shall be holy to me, ki kadosh ani Adonai, for I, God, am holy. V'ovdil etchem min ha'omim li'orli, and I have set you apart from other peoples to be mine. What does this mean? So Rashi quotes an absolutely fascinating midrash. It's one of these that is often, it occurs in a lot of different places. It's quoted often, so you might have come across it already. But it's an absolutely incredible and important midrash, and it says the following. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Minayan shelo yomar adam nafshi katsa bifsar chazir. How do we know that the wrong mentality is to say, I'm disgusted by pig. The idea of wearing, you know, clothes that are a mixture of wool and linen, ugh, that disgusts me. Aval yoma, but one should say, efshi uma eesev avisha bashamayim gazar elai. What you should say, the mentality should be, I would love nothing more than a cheeseburger right now. But the only reason I'm not eating that cheeseburger is because God has commanded me otherwise. Every time we drive past, I don't know, I'm now trying to think of like non-kosher places you drive past the entire time. Like every time you drive past one of those places, you should be like, I would love to go there right now. But it is only because I am a Jew that I am not. That's the mentality we're supposed to say. We're supposed to have Talmud Lomar. Why? Va'avdil etchem min ha'amim liot li. I will separate your people. Shetehei havdaltchem mehem lishmi. Separate yourself for my sake. Poresh min ha'aveira u'makabel alav ol malchut shemayim. Accept you know the yoke of heaven from you for yourselves. Sorry. The mentality that is supposed to be here, as Rav Lichtenstein points out, what this midrash is getting at, is that if the reason you don't eat pork is because it does not appeal to you, if the only reason you are an observant Jew is because it is a convenient life for you and you like it, then you're not worshiping God. You're not observing his mitzvot. You're just doing what you happen to like doing. You're just doing what you want to do. And I think this is such an important idea for all of us, because whether we grew up observant or we, you know, came to observancy, you know, at another point in our lives, it is very easy to nonetheless find ourselves at a point of stasis where we are spiritually climbing. But then at a certain point, we just do the things we do and we don't really think about it anymore. And we do the things we do because we like to do them. We enjoy them. Maybe we find them, you know, the life they give us is the life we want. But that therein lies the problem. We're supposed to assert, and this is not to say a Jewish life should be miserable. This is not to say one should never find any joy in the things they do. But it is to say that if everything you are doing is simply being done because it's convenient to you, because it already speaks to you, and you're never stretching, you're never pushing yourself, you're never attempting to do difficult things, then there's a failing there. You're supposed to want to eat pork and just resist it. Because what that means is that you are accepting that your life must be subservient to God. If you're just repulsed by the idea that, like, personally, I would love to try lobster. I don't know why. I've never had it. Just for point of reference there. If I was disgusted by it, I feel like it's one of those things many people are disgusted by. Well, there is a problem, because then you're not fulfilling the prohibition of not eating lobster, because you just don't want it. That's a problem. You're supposed to at least have some sliver of temptation. If you have some sliver of temptation to break Shabbat, then your Shabbat, you know, then what are you really doing? You're just doing what you always do. You're just in the same groove, the same routine you are always in. What Jews need to be doing is continually pushing themselves and continually looking towards accepting the obligations that are imposed upon them by God, and recognizing and realizing that this is what we need to do. And another principle I didn't put on the source sheet, but is a principle I think is such a fascinating one. Chazal speak of the term mitzvah goreret mitzvah, that every mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. What's behind this principle is the idea that essentially, the more of the system you accept upon yourself, the more you are bound by it. The more observant you are, the fewer excuses you have to observe, you know, to not observe the rest of things. If you're already accepting, you know, Shabbat, Kashrut, yada, 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 then what's your excuse for not doing X? Picking and choosing just doesn't work. We have to live lives where we accept that we are obligated to do things, and we recognize and realize that we should be constantly striving and pushing ourselves to observe the mitzvot. There is a very powerful quote that Rav Lichtenstein develops, which I put in source number 11. It's in Pirkei Avot. It's one of the Rabban Gamliels. We have a string of Mishnayot, which talk about Rabban Gamliel's statements. Hu haya omer. And he would say the following. Asei ritzono kirtzoncha. Do God's will as though it's your will. Kedesha ya'ase ritzoncha kirtzono. So that he will do your will as though it's his. Batel ritzonecha mipnei ritzono. Nullify your own will in the face of his. Kedei sheyavotel ritzon acherim mipnei ritzoncha. So that he may set aside the will of others for the sake of your will. Okay, that's kind of like quid pro quo somewhat within this. But not the core. The key point is this idea of recognizing our own will, our own desires as humans must be subservient to that of God. To which Rav Lichtenstein writes the following. Now, to live the existence of a mitzuveh, of one who is called and commanded, involves to some extent the subjugation of one's inclinations and desires. A mitzuveh leads a theocentric rather than an anthropocentric life. He is guided by God's will, not by his own likes and preferences. Nullify your will before God's will, quotes what we just read in source 11, constitutes a cardinal tenet of Judaism. Even within the realm of Avodat Hashem proper, one needs to beware of imposing his own inclinations excessively. If you are commanded, you do not pick and choose among commands. That would be living an anthropocentric life, placing yourself in the center and building everything around yourself. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al Ha'adam means first and foremost that God's will is at the center. Your will may be factored in, but only secondarily. And this is essentially what a good Jew is. And as we think about trying to be better Jews during El, in preparation for the Yamim Noraim, in one sense, it's a really easy process. And in another sense, it is incredibly difficult. Because what essentially, and everyone has to think for themselves of those points where, yes, you get points for keeping Shabbos. I want to make it very clear. You get points for keeping Shabbos, even if it's second nature to you. Like, let's just make this very clear. Like, you still did mitzvot. But ultimately, it's those aspects of Judaism that don't appeal to us, that we don't really want to accept the obligations upon, where the battle must be waged, where repentance is truly achieved, that every single one of us will have parts of our Jewish lives where deep down we are like, we don't really want to do this. We don't like it. We don't enjoy it. And those are exactly the areas that we should be focusing our attention on. Because by accepting, by committing to perform those mitzvot that we don't want to do, that is our way of indicating our subservience to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is our way of recognizing that we are trying to strive to be better people. Everyone, if you're already Shabbat observant, it is really, really easy, not quite, but you know, to be incrementally better at Shabbat observance. Everyone loves a good chumrah for that reason. Why do we love stringencies? Because it's like, do what you're already doing, just slightly more intensely, just slightly better. Who doesn't want to? All they're already doing a Pesach Seder, so they'll do a slight tweak, and that's not to knock improving things incrementally. That's not to mock, you know, marginal gains in our religious life. But it is, if the only aspects of teshuvah you are identifying are improving the things you're already doing pretty well, while conveniently ignoring large sections of other parts of your Jewish life that you are just, that's not for me, not for me. Like, and that is a mentality and it's not just, again, our community. All Jews have this to a certain extent. There are some mitzvot we observe, and then there are others where we're like, not for me, that's not my thing. That's just not what I do. At a certain point, yes, that's what humans do, fine. But at least again, if there's one time of the year we cannot allow ourselves to say that, it's the teshuva period, it's Elul and the Yamim Noraim. We have to realize it's not actually a good excuse. It's not a good rationale. And it's those things that we think aren't for us that are the very areas of our Jewish lives we need to improve. That being said, everything I've been saying is hopefully, in many ways, inspiring people, but it can also be a bit deflating to basically, you know, realize what you're doing is not good enough. No matter what you are doing, you are failing at the basics of your Jewish life because you're just not doing enough. I realize that is not, you know, this is not the sheer everyone walks away, you know, feeling good about themselves to a certain extent. But I was thinking, a source came to my mind, a really, really, really fascinating source came to my mind that I think can help provide a little bit of a measure of balance to everything I've been saying, and is a fascinating responsa. And everyone's eyes are going to go straight to the source. Please don't just yet. But it is a fascinating responsa written by Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski. Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski died in 1940. He was basically the most prominent rabbi before Rav Moshe Feinstein, and a very, very, very significant and important rabbi. And this teshuvah of his, he was asked a question, and his answer is one of the, it's also from the laws of conversion. It's one of the best known and controversial responsa ever issued, but practically has tremendous significance. And I will just say, before we look at this source, there is so much of the conversion process that I think every single Jew needs to go through. First of all, just the Judaism 101. Like most of us, at best, we pick things up from others and maybe we bought a book or two on it. But like going through an actual rigorous process with like questions that you have to answer and you have to actually study things in a systematic way, we would all benefit from applying that rigor to our Jewish lives. But you know, that kind of that spiritual growth is also something that's very applicable to all of us, particularly during this period. And Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski was asked a very fascinating question. So when it comes to conversion, there are a few different components. There are what we might call, for want of a better expression, the ritual side of things, circumcision for men, tevila in a mikveh, those sorts of things. But one of the most important aspects of conversion is what we call kabbalat hamitzvot, accepting the commandments. You cannot convert unless you are willing to accept the binding nature of all commandments. literally just witnessed this yesterday with a conversion meeting, which was like a final meeting for a green light, and literally the bait didn't go one by one through everyone. Do, even though you've not seen all the commandments, like, do you accept them all? And if you don't say yes, it's a problem, right? Like you have to accept all of the mitzvot. So Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski was asked what is a somewhat common question, especially nowadays. Someone was marrying a Jewish man was marrying a non-Jewish woman. And so the non-Jewish woman wanted to convert. The reality was that this non-Jewish woman was not going to, they weren't going to live the most religious of lives. And so we have a problem. Can you convert someone who is not going to observe all of the mitzvot? If someone says to you point blank in the conversion process, I'm a gossip. I love me some gossip. And no matter what I do, I am going to tattle, tell tales about every single person I know, as tell every day that I live. Can you convert such a person? So Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski comes up with a really, really fascinating argument in favor of converting such a person. And he says the following. De'ein lachosh lezeh, there's no worry. Source number 13. Kevan demekabel alav kol hamitzvot. Someone can accept upon themselves all of the mitzvot. They accept the binding nature of them. They recognize, they realize they have to observe all of these mitzvot. Af shechoshev la'avor al eza miha mitzvot achar kach l'tevan. But they know. Nonetheless, we know, they know, everyone knows, this person is l'tevan through temptation. They're going to want to satisfy an urge, and so they are nonetheless going to violate this mitzvah. The convert stands in the room and they say, I accept the binding nature of all the mitzvot, even though everyone knows straight after conversion, they're going to be spreading rumors about the Beit Din that converted them. That's just their nature. They cannot help Lashon Hara. That's their thing. Thank you, Andy, for laughing. Mikol makom. Ein ze minya lekabel ha-mitzvot. There's no problem here. This is not refusing to accept the binding nature of all the commandments. V'davka hecha shematna shelo lekabel alav. It's only when they explicitly state that there are mitzvot, they refuse to observe. Zehu chisaron bekabalot hamitzvot demakev. This is the kind of deficiency that creates problems. As in, there's a fundamental difference between someone who everyone knows is going to be a gossip versus someone who says, I accept all of the mitzvot except this Lashon Hara because I love it too much. Two very different things. The former, Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski says, is okay. The latter is a problem. And then he says something which is, by the way, absolutely fascinating for so many reasons. Ulam hecha shabaro hadava. Shebevada yavo achare kol isurei Torah chilul shabbat v'achilu trefot. However, if we know that they're still not going to keep Shabbat and they're not going to keep kosher, va'anu yode'im bevirur kavanato she'eino mitkaya. They can't convert. That he draws the line there. And it's fascinating because essentially Shabbat, Kashrut, and perhaps some observance of the laws of family purity tend to be the mitzvot we tend to define as being part of the Orthodox community. He grasps that. There are some mitzvot. At the end of the day, someone who keeps Shabbat, someone who keeps Kashrut, we don't question their kind of place in the Orthodox community. Those are kind of the mitzvot we consider to quote unquote make one from. But what Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski is getting at here is that there is a difference between refusing to accept mitzvot and failing at observing some of the mitzvot. And I'll stop sharing the screen at this point. And this is something that I think is very important for all of us as we engage in a period of teshuva. Because there is a difference between our refusing to observe a given commandment because we hate it, we despise it, we don't like it, versus recognizing that we are weak human beings who are going to struggle. The truth is, I am still a very bad waker-upper. But for many years, I struggled to wake up early in the morning. But I always drew a distinction between nights that I went to sleep and I still set an alarm versus the idea of going to sleep and not setting an alarm. Because even though practically speaking, not much changes, the mentality is completely different. If you set an alarm, you are saying, I want to wake up. I'm going to strive to wake up, even though everyone knows it ain't happening. If you don't set an alarm, you're not even giving yourself a fighting chance. And that is what I see as with more, you know, broad practicalities for all of us coming through with the Paimo Zagodzinski. Everyone sins. We accept. But there is a world of difference between someone who refuses to accept the nature of a given command. Oh, it's just not for me. I refuse. Don't tell me. Don't teach me. Which, by the way, I will just say this for people who are always afraid to learn a given halacha for fear it will impose more things on them. In just my experience, halacha tends to liberate far more than it tends to impose, but that's just a side point. Obviously, that depends on, you know, what halacha you are learning, admittedly. But it's so important for all of us to at least shift mentalities. Realistically, over the next few weeks, are we going to undo potentially decades of resistance to observing certain mitzvot? No, we're not. But that might not be our goal, this Elul and this Yamim no Raim. Our goal might be to at least shift towards the recognition that we should be doing that. Practically, it doesn't change things. You might still continue to be a gossip, for example. You might continue to still be the ultimate Baal Lashon Hara, the ultimate teller of Lashon Hara. But there is a world of difference nonetheless between someone who does it because they don't care, they enjoy it, versus someone who knows it's wrong. Someone who knows that what they are doing is not the right thing. Because in one case, you're essentially relegating God to the background and placing yourself front and center. While in the other situation, you are recognizing that God still commands your life. You just realistically can't observe everything. You can't do everything. And that for everyone, there is a religious growth process that needs to take place. And so practically speaking, what is a good Jew? A good Jew is someone who accepts the binding nature of all of the commandments. What all of us need to shift our mentality towards this period, during this period of time, is the recognition of that fact, to stop picking and choosing within our Jewish lives. Practically speaking, we're not going to go from 0 to 60 overnight, but at least, and I mentioned this like last week, I almost want to focus more on mentality than practicality, because I think that's important. We at least need a shift of our mentalities, where we move from only doing the things we want because we like them, we enjoy them, they make us feel good, into recognizing we are bound by a whole host of things. And please God, there will come a time when we observe more than we don't. And there will come a time when we observe all of those things. But at least between that point and now, we'll be at a place where our mentality recognizes that we are commanded to do things. And even if we don't do them, we recognize that we should. We realize what the right thing is, becoming more subservient to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. And therein lies, I think, the path of teshuva and the path we all must take.